are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Thursday, January 11th, 2017, 2018. And I am Michael Brooks on a Michael Thursday, and this is the five-time award-winning. Two things off there.
Stuck in the past.
2018, five awards. Five-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, Trita Parsi, president of the Iranian American Council, on the protests in Iran, Iran's internal politics, the backlash against neoliberalism in Iran, and will our demented, unstable president destroy the successful, mostly successful, Iran deal? Internal democratic rebellion brewing as Senate Democratic leaders seem willing to negotiate over DACA with Trump and the Republicans, potentially entertaining some very, very bad policies around immigration. And immigration agents target 7-Eleven stores across the country. This is where we're at. Joe Arpaio and Kelly Ward, the rumble of the absolutely beyond insane in Arizona. He's defending birtherism and saying that his president is wrong. All DACA recipients should be deported. Walmart is breaking out some wage increases and bonuses. They're saying it's thanks to the tax bill, but shockingly, they're being a little dishonest about it. Trump administration opening the door for states to implement working requirements for those that receive Medicaid. That'll really help already terrorized lower income people. And top U.S. government computers are linked to revenge porn sites. That's interesting. It's very nice. And Democrats invite victims of sexual misconduct to Trump's State of the Union address.
Unfair.
Trump will be up there being like, do I recognize you? Did I stare blankly into space while I touched your nipples on a plane? Eh, whatever, I don't know. Anyways, people have been totally unfair to me. And the Trump declines to say whether or not he'll sit down for an interview with Special Prosecutor Bob Mueller. And he has sold the Trump family. Trump has sold $35 million worth of real estate, mostly to secretive buyers in 2017, as we discover the real meaning of Make America Great Again. All that and much more on today's program. Now, if you're like me, it always seemed that there were basically two, there were a couple of areas where Trump had good instincts, seemed to know that the obvious moral and economic case of giving everybody free universal government health care was probably popular, which is why randomly, even in the Michael Wolff book, he apparently asked his aides why Medicare couldn't cover everybody. Obviously, he's a doesn't know anything, and he's a totally despicable person, so he's completely on board with all Republican efforts to destroy people's health insurance and make things even worse in an already disastrous private insurance situation. Besides that, I mean, he pretty much doesn't know anything. He is an idiot in many, many ways.
I'm also lazy, so if we can just do the Medicare, yeah. And I can go home.
If we could just, I think that healthcare is gross, and if we could just give everybody Medicare, and I could go talk to Tom Barrack while I eat a cheeseburger, and then maybe give another go at Tillerson's wife, that would be great. But there were two areas where it seemed like he sort of, by Trump standards, which meant that he still pretty much didn't know anything, seemed to kind of know something, and those were eminent domain, awesome, because eminent domain, you can kick old people out of their homes and build a casino. and also libel laws. They really need to be toughened up, presumably on people that do honest reporting about his just sort of unending lack of ethics and connections to the mafia and, you know, daddy issues and sexual assault and everything else. All of the stories swirling around Trump, presumably not, as Matt pointed out earlier, he wouldn't want libel laws applied to him, presumably, toughened libel laws. But he seems to have a real fixation with it. And now with the Michael Wolff book coming out, he's back at it. Here is Donald Trump talking about the area where he probably has the most policy fluency, restricting the rights of the free press to cover him.
We are going to take a strong look at our country's libel laws, so that when somebody says something that is false and defamatory about someone, that person will have meaningful recourse in our courts. If somebody says something that's totally false and knowingly false, that the person that has been abused, defamed, libeled, will have meaningful recourse. Our current libel laws are a sham and a disgrace and do not represent American values or American fairness. So we're going to take a strong look at that. We want fairness. You can't say things that are false, knowingly false, and be able to smile as money pours into your bank account. We're going to take a very, very strong look at that. And I think what the American people want to see is fairness.
So I was born in Africa and wiretapped you? Okay. Yeah, bring on the new libel laws, you orange-faced prick. That's a great thing. I mean, it's like, I just love the fact that, yes, if this was applied to him, I mean, the guy, when he's not threatening people that have accurately reported about him, he's basically arguably libeling everybody else. Like, even by UK standards, what might end up happening is that Trump's libel cases are still thrown out, even under a generous standard. And then all of a sudden, he's just getting sued for libel constantly and losing. Folks, window treatments are one of those soulless adulting terms for necessary but boring AF. I think we all know what that stands for. Your blinds.
What?
What? Your blinds. You don't even need to think about them unless you move or they break. When they're right, though, everything in your home looks better. And when they're wrong, everything in your home looks cheap. But let's be honest, taking the time to pick up and buy blinds sounds expensive, kind of boring, and installing them yourself sounds harder than any self-respecting adult wants to admit. But Blinds.com makes it easy for you. Not sure what you want or even where to start? With Blinds.com, you get free online design consultation. Just send them a picture of your house, and they send back custom recommendations from a professional for what will work with your color scheme, furniture, and specific rooms. They'll even send you free samples to make sure everything looks as good in person as it does online, and every order gets free shipping. This is the best part. If you accidentally mismeasure or pick the wrong color, if you screw up, Blinds.com will make the blinds, will remake blinds for free. They've really made it easy for you, and there's no excuse to leave those mangled blinds that make your place look like it's from the set of The Wire. And for a limited time, you get up to 20% off of everything at Blinds.com when you use the promo code MAJORITY. That's blinds.com. Blinds.com, promo code MAJORITY for up to 20% off of everything. Folks with blinds, cellular shades, roller shades, and more. Blinds.com, promo code MAJORITY. Rules and restrictions apply. This Sunday's illicit history for Michael Brooks Show patrons. Nathan Robinson and I, on the illicit history of Charles Murray's bell curve, were debunking the racist science and also understanding the larger political project behind it. And, you know, check it out, obviously, on iTunes or YouTube channel if you haven't yet. Or you can become one of now over, I think it's like 962 patrons at patreon.com/TMBS. Thank all of you. Hope you check it out if you haven't yet. We're going to go into our conversation with Trita Parsi on the Iran protests, the future of the Iran deal, and how Trump is destabilizing the global order on the Majority Report. Welcome back to the Majority Report, Michael Brooks. Joining me now is Trita Parsi. He is author of Losing an Enemy, Obama, Iran, and the Victory of Diplomacy, or For Diplomacy. Did I get that right, Trita?
Triumph of Diplomacy.
The Triumph of Diplomacy. Pardon me. Trita, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Trita, I've spoken to you before. I've appreciated your work for a long time, and I really appreciated an interaction you had last week on MSNBC where you were on a panel with Bill Kristol, who most people listening to this or watching this will know is a kind of primarily known, his sort of primary contribution to American life, I guess, other than sort of scouting Sarah Palin, is agitating for wars across the Middle East. And you were on this panel, and you had an interesting response to his claiming of affinity and solidarity with people inside Iran marching for greater economic and civil rights.
Yeah, essentially, I was giving a response explaining some of the causes for these protests and some of the causes for the economic grievances, which includes the problems with sanctions relief under the nuclear deal caused by Donald Trump. And he jumps in and essentially rejects that and says that the real only cause that exists is that the Iranians want freedom, and says that we need to respect the Iranian people. Now, of course, the desire for freedom in Iran is very strong, but the idea that he would be telling me to respect the Iranian people, I was not going to let that pass without giving him an answer. And I pointed out to him that after years of arguing bombing Iran and advocating killing Iranians, he's in no position to claim to respect the Iranian people.
Yeah, and what did you make of, I mean, I just thought it was very revealing because, you know, there was this sort of reaction on the panel from the host, almost as if you were being uncivil to Bill Kristol, and you weren't. I mean, you certainly tonally, you know, you didn't yell, you didn't hyperventilate. You just said something that was just demonstrably true. And I'm just kind of wondering that, and we'll move to the administration in a second, which is, I guess, you know, is at this point more to the point than Bill Kristol. But what do you make of this kind of odd paradox and problem in American discourse where we could kind of get on a Trita Parsi for just correctly noting what Bill Kristol's not only, you know, not some errant, stupid comment that he made in 2003, but a sort of decades-long project of foreign policy agitation, that to sort of note that is somehow not civil or inappropriate, that we have to take this kind of rhetoric at face value.
Yeah, I have to tell you, one of the things I was most shocked by was how the host came to his defense.
Right.
And even said, let's get it straight, Bill Kristol has not advocated killing Iranians. And I had to correct her and say, not at all.
Right.
He has. And I don't know if it is because she's just completely ignorant and has no idea about anything. I mean, let's be frank, it's not as if all of these anchors are particularly knowledgeable about the topics that they bring in guests to talk about.
Present company accepted,
but
of course.
Of course. But at the same time, it does seem to fit into a pattern in which the memory of the media is extremely short. And particularly now when there are good reasons to be critical of many of Trump's policies and behaviors, there seems to be a desire to be completely forgiving of anything the neocons have done simply because they oppose Trump. Now, they oppose Trump mainly because Trump rejected them, right, not because of any other reason. But it's still highly problematic because just because they oppose Trump doesn't mean that that whitewashes what they have done with the Iraq war. That still is causing thousands of people to die in the Middle East and hundreds of Americans who continue to suffer from that war as well. It's pretty sad because if we allow ourselves to forget, rest assured we will also allow us to repeat these mistakes.
Right, no doubt. And not only that, I mean, yes, Donald Trump rejected them rhetorically, but certainly with regards to Iran policy, he's very much embracing that neocon legacy. So let's get to that. It seems as if the protests in Iran have generally kind of been sort of dying down a bit. It's very unclear exactly what was happening with the reporting emanating out of Iran. My read was that a lot of the protests seem to be driven by actually some very familiar issues across the globe, inequality, political cronyism, dysfunctional and parasitic relationships between kind of the business class and the governing class, which have shrunk opportunities. There's that whole Instagram feed you can see of the rich kids of Tehran, which are these, the princesses and princes of the kind of government and other wealthy elites showing off their wealth. It seems like these protests were maybe very much not there was an objection to the human rights record, certainly, but a lot of the objections were also in on, day in and day out issues that you might find in many other parts of the world, dealing with the present situation we're in internationally.
Certainly, and it was actually quite interesting to see that many of these causes are economic grievances that we are finding in many different places driven by similar type of economic policies or lack of policies at times. Now, of course, in the Iranian context, you always have a situation in which there isn't a full acceptance of the current regime. So when protests of this kind happen, it is not unusual that there would also be slogans not just against economic policy, but also against the regime as a whole and its very existence whether it should continue. In this specific case, that happened tremendously fast. And it was very, very hard-hitting. And I think it is a sign that there is a tremendous amount of discontent in the society, precisely for the reasons that you mentioned, the economic inequality, cronyism, corruption, mismanagement, but there's also the political and social frustration that have never gone away, mm-hmm. precisely because of the repressive nature of the Islamic Republic. And one of the things that was fascinating with all of this is that the people who seem to be driving those protests, at least after the first day, seem to be people who actually were not bought into the idea that there is a possibility for change from within,
right.
who believe that there can be reform, but people who either have lost hope in that or who never believed it in the first place.
Now, do you think that, and this will cover, I guess, the reactions inside, we'll talk about the reactions inside Iran itself before we get back to Trump and the neocons and so on. The reaction was interesting because the supreme leader basically blamed outside agitators, and maybe you could speak to that as well. I don't think there's any contradiction between absolutely recognizing that there's plenty of organic and natural grievance and opposition inside Iran, and also that, of course, the sort of intelligence apparatus of a foreign adversary might be interested in taking advantage of that. There's no real contradiction. But he basically came out and said, this is all outside agitators, blah, blah, blah. President Rouhani seemed to strike a very different note.
Yes, from the very beginning, Rouhani adopted a different tone in which he was acknowledging the protesters' right to protest, acknowledging some of their frustrations. And this was quite unusual because, some of the slogans were targeting the regime as a whole and even calling for Khamenei's death. So for him to come out and say that, you know, they have a right to protest, it is a way for him to also criticize the conservatives. The background to all of this is that in mid-December, he gives a speech in the parliament and starts giving a hint about some of the things that's going to be in the proposed budget. And there he raises question marks about billions of dollars that are going to various conservative-controlled Islamic charities with no accountability, no transparency, and starts essentially raising question marks as to why they should be in the budget in the first place. This is then really angering the conservatives, and they organize the first protest in the city of Mashhad, hoping to use some of the economic frustration that existed in the country against Rouhani, because in that budget there were also cuts to welfare programs and things of that nature, and a spiking of the fuel prices that would hit the poorer segments of society quite hard. But the conservatives quickly lose control over this because people were so angry, so a lot of other people start joining the protest, and they were not there to protest Rouhani, they were there to protest the entire regime, including the conservatives. I think from Rouhani's perspective, the conservatives broke a red line that exists within the Iranian political elite, which says that they will fight their fights within the elite, within the parliament, but they will not take it out to the streets. In this case, the conservatives did take it out to the streets, and they quickly lost control over it and created instability in the country from the Rouhani perspective. So he's now responding in kind by siding with the protest, using the protest to hit back at his conservative critics. Because by him going out there and saying that this was not just because of economic grievances, there's also political and social grievances, what he's essentially trying to do is to ensure that he channels the anger of the protesters against the conservatives, because he is vulnerable on the economic front, but the conservatives are vulnerable on the political front. So if this is also right, political in nature, then he's kind of challenging their anger against them. And in some ways, this shows that not only has the discipline within the elite started to falter because they're breaking their own rules, it also shows that the protests were successful.
Yeah.
Because the protests forced the elite to have conversations that they were not willing to have otherwise, to break their own rules. In that sense, at least in the beginning, one of their objectives had been achieved.
That's fascinating. So then, because the way I have sort of framed it is that, you know, basically Rouhani, and of course, you know, pardon all of the just vast, vast differences, obviously, but Rouhani represents some type of Obama or Clinton style option within the context of the Islamic Republic, in the sense that there are all of these problems, there's all these, you know, grievances, they're structural, and I'm very much of this establishment, but I kind of get it in certain ways, and I might be willing to make some minor adjustments, right? And I see, and obviously in a much more, you know, risky and sort of personally dangerous situation than an Obama or Clinton face. Although who knows if Trump gets a second term. But that being said, he has had, as far as I understand, he has made some, you know, not far reaching, but some not insignificant reforms on certain civil liberties issues and reducing drug sentencing and things like that in Iran, which are important in people's lives. But he's also, like his more sort of center right, centrist brethren and sistren here, you know, he's, as you said before, in that budget still had some, you know, real austerity proposals, which are, you know, not going to help most Iranians. So he leveraged it against the conservatives because, of course, they're totally reactionary on human rights, openness, and civil rights, and probably not even sincere on economics at all. But does Rouhani also see here that maybe if he's going to continue to leverage that, he might need to start rethinking his economic approach a bit as well? Or is it, I mean, what do you make of that?
So that's actually one of the main criticisms against Rouhani from within his own ranks, within reformists, etc., who support the fact that he's trying to open up the country. I mean, he's standing up against the conservatives on some social issues. I mean, we saw just a week before this reports that the police would stop harassing women in Tehran for not wearing the hijab correctly. This week also that Iran appears likely to stop imposing death penalty on drug crimes. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, the number of executions in Iran is going to plummet quite significantly, because most of the executions are on the grounds of drug crimes. So these are things that I think many people would say are steps in the right direction. But his economic outlook is oftentimes criticized as being very neoliberal. Mm-hmm. And at a time where a lot of other countries are starting to realize that neoliberalism does create some wealth in the short run, but creates a tremendous amount of inequality, and perhaps most importantly, economic uncertainty and anxiety, and as a result are starting to push back against those type of policies, Rouhani has taken the country in that opposite direction. It's almost like 20, 30 years behind the rest of the world on this. Right. So when it comes to some of these austerity measures, there's going to be a need for him to rethink some of these things. There are also some things of it that actually does make sense. I mean, it is going to be very tough for many people in Iran that fuel prices go up, but fuel prices are ridiculously low in Iran because of subsidies. Mm-hmm. So there is a need to change that because of environmental issues and other things. But when you do that in the context of a broader neoliberal policy in which you already have created so much uncertainty and anxiety for ordinary people, then of course that ends up becoming a negative rather than something that actually can move the country in the right direction.
Right. So let's get to Trump. But first, just briefly, I know some people will be curious about this. I'm rather pretty skeptical about this myself. But I mean, these are organic uprisings, and to the extent to which there was any type of outside role or interest, it would be in the covert version of what Bill Kristol was saying on TV, which is essentially cynical actors here being interested in leveraging other people's, you know, struggles and politics to advance their own policy ends, but not something obviously that was just sort of imposed from outside in the view of, you know, the Supreme Leader and I guess a couple of people on Twitter here.
Yeah, so I think I've not seen any evidence that there would be any orchestration coming from the outside that was actually affected. Mm-hmm. Or that there were foreign intelligence services involved. Now, certainly foreign intelligence services that have expressed a desire to cause or to stir problems of this kind definitely is there. Whether they did it or not is a different problem or a different question. And the fact that the Iranian government would be very quick to go out and blame them is almost standard operations. They'll do so under all circumstances. It's difficult to take that seriously. What is more interesting is that there's Iranian officials who've gone out there and said that no, there was no foreign intervention in this or foreign backing of this. Now, there was foreign agitation about this by non-state actors. I mean, there's some elements in the U.S. and elsewhere that were really trying to agitate and try to actually encouraging the protesters to become much more violent. But there's no evidence that there were any states behind that.
Right.
So that's also an important distinction to be made, that, okay, perhaps there was some agitation coming from the outside, but these were not state-sponsored. These are individuals or groups.
So then let's turn to the response of the Trump administration. I mean, on some level, I mean, is it just sort of, even amongst the Trump people, it's hard to imagine who they're playing to when Trump, as an example, expresses solidarity with the demonstrators, even after all of the sort of damage his policies have inflicted on Iran and specifically Iranians with regards to the Muslim ban. And, you know, I guess I understand that obviously there is very much, you know, U.S. Policy and desire, which we're quite overt about, for regime change one way or another. But it did seem, especially in the context of an administration that has kind of intentionally really downplayed human rights rhetoric and human rights moves in general. It seemed, I guess, just not only cynical, but also just sort of ludicrous.
I would tend to agree with that. I mean, as my colleague Reza Meraji pointed out, Trump has tweeted 2,900 times since he became president. Only four of those tweets mentioned human rights. Mm-hmm. All four of those tweets were on Iran.
Wow.
Nothing on Saudi Arabia.
Wow.
Nothing on Syria. Nothing on the genocide that currently is taking place in Myanmar. Nothing, nothing, nothing. But then suddenly on Iran, then that leaves the impression, a strong impression, that he's simply just instrumentalizing human rights, that he's trying to use that for his own objectives of just pursuing a confrontational policy. And this is very unhelpful. And we saw the effect of that at the Security Council. Nikki Haley, who's using her ambassadorship at the UN to essentially launch her presidential campaign, mm-hmm. Called for an extra session at the UN Security Council. This is quite unusual because the Security Council only deals with issues that are defined as threats to international peace and security. These protests were not at that level. But nevertheless, a meeting was held, and the meeting ended up becoming one in which most of the countries used it to criticize the United States and call into question why the meeting was being held in the first place.
Right.
And warning that this was undermining the authority of the Security Council and its credibility. Only two countries sided with the U.S., and that was Peru and the U.K. All countries, of course, expressed concern about the human rights situation in Iran, but quickly turned it to criticize the U.S. and then also call for the U.S. not to kill the nuclear deal. Mm-hmm. So it showed what a farce it had become precisely because the Trump administration has zero credibility on this issue. Compare this to the situation at the U.N. when you use the proper channel to criticize Iran's human rights abuses, to legitimately criticize it. That's at the Third Committee in the General Assembly and at the UN Human Rights Commission, in which the annual resolution on the human rights situation in Iran that is highly critical of Iran's human rights abuses passes with roughly 75 to 85 votes in favor for the last couple of years, only 30 or so countries voting against. If the vote had been held at the Security Council, the United States would have lost, whereas under normal circumstances, it wins with a margin of 50 votes. But when you do it the wrong way, with no credibility, and it's so blatantly clear that you are just instrumentalizing it for your own reasons, then you lose. And that what happens then is that it's actually the human rights situation in Iran that suffers, because there is a need for putting a spotlight on the human rights abuses in Iran. And there's a need to do it the right way so it doesn't backfire. And the Trump administration is doing essentially everything the wrong way.
So then let's move then to the deal. And also just, I mean, another sort of just clear point to bring up, obviously, is that, you know, even if you took theoretically for a moment the idea that anybody from Trump to Bill Kristol to Nikki Haley was sincere about Iranian human rights, which, you know, I certainly don't, you know, obviously, an American leader, any, but most especially a Donald Trump, you know, keeping quiet would obviously be the most helpful, so as to not be utilized by the regime. The deal with Iran, obviously, Trump personally, and there does seem to be conflict inside the administration about it, he has tried to undermine it, and it does seem to be really purely just an expression of his just kind of personal emotions and frustration and humiliation that he can't put his own distinct spin on it. I guess before we get there, could you just briefly re-review, in fact, in the face of all of this propaganda, and not just from Trump, but really all of the Republican neocon and pretty much all the Republican foreign policy establishment, the deal is working quite effectively, right?
Well, the two immediate objectives of the deal are working perfectly fine. The one is that, of course, blocking all of Iran's paths to a nuclear weapon. And secondly, making sure that this wouldn't lead to a military confrontation between the United States and Iran. In that sense, it's been working extremely well. the areas where it hasn't worked is that the United States has not properly lifted sanctions. Mm. And the Trump administration has deliberately sabotaged that process. There were some problems during the Obama years as well. Not a lot of signs that that was deliberate. But under the Trump administration, it's very deliberate. And there's actually clear violations by the United States now of the deal as well. Mm-hmm. So, and that's quite a sad situation because the main objectives were reached. You know, the Iranians are not going to be able to have a pathway to a bomb. And war was taken off the table, essentially, or made unnecessary. And both of those very bad scenarios will come back onto the table if Donald Trump succeeds in killing the deal.
So, and I guess the question would be then, I mean, will he? I mean, we just see reports now that he did, you know, he didn't renew the deal. He did, and to be clear, this sort of side process of the of re-reviewing it every couple of months, the Congress stuck into it. This has nothing to do with the actual deal that was established in Switzerland between Iran and the P5 plus one. It was basically a side deal that seems to me Republicans put in as an opportunity to sort of, you know, suggest that Obama is easy on Iran every couple of months by forcing him to reauthorize it. And then presumably Hillary Clinton, had she been elected president and continued the Iran deal. So, you know, Trump didn't renew it last time. There's rumors and reports, though, that, again, the recommendation that he is going to get, just as the first recommendation in his first couple of months in office from his foreign policy team, is that he should, in fact, continue the deal. So we're in this, you know, kind of odd stalemate, and there must be internal politics inside the administration about this, with some people who very clearly want to take a very hawkish and dangerous line, and others, I guess, presumably in the State Department, who, you know, they can at least recognize a working deal when they see one.
Yeah, so there's two things here. Process of constantly every 3 months having to certify it to Congress, you're absolutely right, has nothing to do with the deal. It's actually an internal American mechanism. But it wasn't just the Republicans. It was actually the Democrats as well who pushed for that. And the root for that was because the idea that, you know, Congress has to have a role in this. We have to be able to have oversight. And as a result, they essentially forced the executive branch to send this report to them. There's much that indicates that if that mechanism had not been put into place, Trump could have been open to just forgetting about this deal and letting it be.
Right.
But the fact that every 3 months he has to certify that something Obama did is still working, it's like a recurring insult to his ego.
Right.
And it's something that frustrates him beyond imagination.
Right.
So that's one aspect of it. The other thing is, will he then renew the waivers? Because the United States is obligated to renew the waivers that waives sanctions on Iran, essentially, as long as Iran is living up to the end of to its end of the bargain in the deal. And there's now 9 IAEA reports that said that, yes, the Iranians are actually fully complying with the deal. So the U.S. is then obligated to renew the waivers. He has to decide this by Friday. If he doesn't, then the U.S. is in clear and direct violation of the deal. And it is difficult to imagine that the Iranians would remain compliant to the deal if the U.S. is outside of it. Mm. So we will have a crisis then, but not a crisis caused by Iran, but a crisis caused by Donald Trump.
Right.
How that eventually will work out is not entirely clear. But I personally believe that there's a high likelihood that he actually will renew it. And the reason why he will renew it is actually because of their read of what these protests were caused by. You see, part of the reason why the protests happen is, of course, because the economic grievances. Some of those economic grievances are directly linked to the problems caused by Donald Trump when it comes to sanctions relief. Because the uncertainty that Trump deliberately has created about the durability of the deal by constantly going out there and speculating that he will kill the deal, and or this drama that we have every 3 months to see will he or will he not renew it. That is deliberate, and it's deliberately aimed at creating uncertainty. Uncertainty then has the very direct effect of deterring companies and investors to go into the Iranian market. banks in particular are unwilling to finance investments if their investments are going to end up becoming sanctioned by Donald Trump once or if he chooses to kill the nuclear deal. So the uncertainty then becomes a de facto sanction that is preventing the Iranians from getting the economic benefits that they were promised during under the deal. And without investments, and this is an important part that is relating it to the protest, without investments, the Iranian economy cannot create enough jobs to push down unemployment. Mm-hmm. And investments have come into Iran to a very small extent, precisely because of this uncertainty. I think there is a likelihood that the White House now has viewed the protest as a sign of its success in deterring investments into Iran. Essentially, its success in killing the deal without explicitly killing the deal, without directly making itself responsible for the death of the deal, it is still managing to kill the deal. Mm-hmm. And as a result, there's a likelihood that Trump will be convinced that let's just continue this path. We still manage to create massive problems for Iran, but we're not becoming responsible for actually having pulled the plug on the deal. That way, we don't have to pay the cost of breaking away from the deal while we're still getting the benefit of seeing the Iranians suffer from not getting the what they were promised under the deal.
Yeah, I think that makes complete sense. It's very hard for me to imagine that statement being formulated in the Trump voice, but I think that the substance makes total sense. But he'd express it very differently. But last question then. I mean, it seems then that we're in a scenario where, barring the potential of a true catastrophic nightmare of actual military an attack on Iran, does this just start to look like that, you know, basically Europe just benefits from this more so than, you know, that the deal goes forward, everybody else sort of continues to participate in it, and the United States is just an outlier?
I don't think the economic benefits to Europe have been as significant as some reporting has said. Yes, companies, okay, European companies have gone in and traded with Iran, but the investments have not occurred. So yes, they're capturing much of the trade, but the real economic benefits does not lie in the trade, it lies in the investments. Mm. And there, very few have dared to go in because of this fear of Trump killing the deal. But it's also doing other things that are, you know, neither beneficial to Europe or anyone else. I mean, Europe is very, very much concerned right now because what Trump is doing with this deal is starting to look like a pattern in which he is just going after international agreements one after the other. Mm-hmm. It's not just the Iran deal. It's NATO. It's the Paris Agreement. It's UNESCO. It's all of these different things, which have then left Europeans with the view that the United States is no longer a pillar of the international order. It is a fifth column seeking its demise. Mm. And as a result, Europe needs to distance itself from the United States. It needs to chart its own path. It needs to create its own alliances and even move closer to Russia in some extent because the United States is now a great danger. I would direct you to the speech of the German foreign minister December 5th, which he said two things that were quite, I think, worrisome from an American perspective. One, in which he essentially saying that this is not an anomaly. This is Trump is not an exception. Trump is part of the American normal. Mm. And as a result, right, this will continue after Trump. He's expressing an orientation and a viewpoint that exists in the United States. He's right, not an exception here. And as a result,
so they read it
the
better than
conclusion
Democrats
is,
do, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The second conclusion then is that U.S.-EU relations will never return to what they were pre-Trump. And that is a major geopolitical change on the global scale that is not beneficial to the U.S. and is not beneficial to Europe. This is much bigger than just a nuclear deal.
Well, Chita Parsi, author of Losing an Enemy, Obama, Iran, and the Triumph of Diplomacy, and president of the National Iranian American Council. Really appreciate your time, Chita.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Okay, everybody, We recorded that at about 10 or so this morning. So, fresh off the presses. We're going to go into the fun half. Become a member of the Majority Report today. Majority.fm /become a member/member. Use our jet.com link as the Amazon link is dead. Subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't. You can follow all of us on Twitter. It's in the show notes. If you use Twitter, there's a Facebook page to like. JustCoffee.coop. Get win-win-win coffee. Workers, environment, the cooperative economy, and support the Majority Report. 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. The IAMs will be on in a moment. We will see you in the fun half. We're on.
You are in for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
Are you ready?
Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. 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 Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 boy, back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back, 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 back.
Almost as what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman.
And the alpha males are back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danerke's song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, folks. Reminder.
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are...
Psych. Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black African. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck, fuck, fuck. Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black.
Come on! Blast. Come on! Blast. Come on! Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here!
I am a total
pussy. Pussy, 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 pussy.